Lala's eyes slowly widened, and then his gaze shifted past Quick Ben and Callum to the waiting ranks of Malazan's soldiers.
"When all the beasts are gone," he whispered,
and then raised his voice, once more addressing Callum.
"Your words satisfy me. Inform your High Fist. The perished Greyhelms surrender."
"Good. Disarm. We'll collect your weapons on our way through. Sorry we can't help with your wounded, though. We're in something of a hurry."
"And what do you intend to do with my brothers and sisters?"
Callum frowned.
"Nothing. Just don't follow us. Your role in this whole hood-damned mess is now done."
"Look," the assassin added, "we had to get through the pass. You got in our way. We got no qualms killing the Asael and Ashriven. That's what we're here to do. But you perish? Well, the High Fist made it clear enough. You ain't our enemy. You never was."
As they made their way back, Quick Ben shot Callum a look.
"How did you know?"
"Know what?"
"The thought of us humans slaughtering each other forever and ever. How did you know that he'd settle with that?"
The assassin shrugged.
"I just told him how it was going to be. Soon as he heard it, he knew the truth of it. They may be fanatics, but that don't make them fools."
Quick Ben snorted.
"Beg to differ on that one, Callum."
Grunting, Callum nodded and said,
"Soon as I said it. All right, try this. Even a fanatic can smell the shit they're buried in. Will that do?"
"Not really. They're fools because they then convince themselves it smells sweet. Listen, you basically told him that his sacred beasts were finished."
"Aye. Then I made it taste sweet."
Quick Ben thought about that for a time as they approached the ranks, and finally he sighed.
"You know, Erikala ain't the only fool around here."
"What's that smell? And I thought you were smart, wizard. Now get us some horses while I report to Paran."
"Tavare?
If she's alive, we'll find her."
With an enraged scream, Caraba snapped her head down, jaws closing on the Elaine's shoulder. Bones exploded in her mouth. With the talons of one of her feet, she scythed the beast's underbelly and then struck again, claws plunging deep. Blood and fluids gushed down as she tore loose the dragon's guts. With its carcass still in her jaws, she whipped it to one side into the path of another Elaine. Claws scored across her back. The Ototaral dragon twisted round, lashing with her talons. Puncturing scaly hide, she snatched the dragon close, bit through its neck, and then flung it away. Jaws crunched on one ankle. When her own jaws lunged down, they closed sideways around the back of the Elaine's head. A single convulsive crunch collapsed the skull. Another dragon hammered down on her from above. Talons razored bloody tracks just beneath her left eye. Fangs chewed at the ridge of her neck. Carabas folded her wings, tearing loose and plummeting away from the attacker. The dragon directly below her took the full impact of her immense weight. It spun away, one wing shattered, spine snapped, and fell earthward. Thundering the air, she lifted herself higher once more. Elaine swarmed around her like crows surrounding a condor, darting close and then away again. The air was filled with their reptilian shrieks, the ancients among them roaring their fury. She had killed scores already, had left a trail of dragon corpses strewn on the dead ground in her wake. But it was not enough. Blood streamed from her flanks, her chest creaked with her laboring breath, and the attacks were growing ever more frenzied. The change was coming. She could taste it. In the gore sliming her mouth, shredded between her fangs, in the frantic furnaces of her nostrils, in the air on all sides.
"Too many, Elaine. Too many ancients. The storms are still in collision, but soon they will merge. Soon Tiam will awaken."
Another storm struck. Howling, Carabas lashed out.
crushing chests, tearing legs from hips, wings from shoulders, ripping heads from necks. She bit through rib cages, sent entrails spilling. Bodies fell away, trailing tales of ruin. The air was thick with blood, and much of it her own.
Too much of it my own. Tiam, Tiam, mother, will you devour me? Will you devour your child so wrong, so hated, so abandoned? Mother, see the coming darkness? Will you hear my cries in the dark?
There was terrible pain. The blind rage surrounding her was its own storm, all of it whirling in and down to ceaselessly batter her. She had not asked to be feared. She had not wanted such venom. The only gift from all of her kin. She had not asked to be born.
I hurt so. Will you kill me now? Mother, when you come, will you kill your wrong child?
Around her, an endless maelstrom of dragons. Weakening, she fought on, blind now to her path, blind to everything but the waves of pain and hate assailing her.
This life, it is all that it is, all that I am. This life, why do I deserve this? What have I done to deserve this?
The storms ripped into her. The storms tore her hide, rent vast tears in her wings, until her will alone was all that kept her aloft, flying across these racked skies, as the sun bled out over the horizon far, far behind her.
See the darkness. Hear my cries.
Chapter 23. On this grey day, in a valley deep in stone, where like shades from the dead yard, sorrows come forth in milling shrouds, and but a few leaves, grey as moths, cling to branches on the shouldered hillsides, fluttering to the winds borne on night's passing, I knelt alone and made voice awakened to call upon my God. Waiting in the echoes as the day struggled, until in fading the silence found form for my fingers to brush light as dust, and the crows flapped down into the trees to study a man on his knees with glittering regard, reminding me of the stars that moments before held forth watchful as sentinels on the sky's wall now withdrawn behind my eyes. And all the words I have given in earnest, all the felt anguish and torrid will so sternly set out like soldiers in furrowed rows, hovered in a season's sundering of birds, with no song to beckon them into flight, where my hands now spreading like wings, bloodied in the passion of prayer, lay dying in the bowl of my lap. My God has no words for me on this grey day. Pallor and pallid dust serve a less imagined reply, mute as the leaves in the absence of bestir, and even the sky has forgotten the sun. Give me the wheel of silence to worry answers from this tease of indifference. No matter, I am done with prayers on the lip of dawn, and the sorrows will fade with light. My fill of answers, Fisher Keltath. He'd brought the bundled form as close as he dared, and now it was lying on the ground beside him. The cloth was stained, threadbare, the colour of dead soil. Astride his lifeless horse, he leaned over the saddle horn and with his one eye studied the distant spire. The vast bay on his left, beyond the cliffs, crashed in tumult, as if ripped by tides, but this violence did not belong to the tides. Sorceries were gathering, and the air was heavy and sick with power. It had all been unleashed, and there was no telling how things would fall. But he had done all that he could. Hearing horse hoofs behind him, he twisted round. Tok saluted.
Sir?
Whiskey Jack's face was cruel in its mockery of what it had once been, in the times of living. His beard was the hue of iron below a gaunt, withered face, like the exposed roots of a long-dead tree. The eyes were unseen beneath the ridge of his brows, sunken into blackness.
We are passing away, sinking back from this beloved edge. You cannot remain here, soldier.
I know. Tok gestured with one desiccated hand down to the shrouded form lying on the ground. Behind Whiskey Jack, the bridge burners waited on their mounts, silent, motionless. Tok's eye flitted over them.
I had no idea, sir, he said. There were so many. War is the great devourer, soldier. So many left us along the way.
The tone was emptied of all emotion, and this alone threatened to break what remained of Tok's heart.
This is not how you should be. We are fading. So little remains. So little.
When Whiskey Jack wheeled his mount and set off, his bridge burners following, Tok rode with them for a short distance, flanking the solid mass of riders, until something struck him deep inside, like the twist of a knife, and he reined in once more, watching as they continued on. Longing tore at his soul.
I once dreamed of being a bridge burner. If I had won that, I would now be riding with them, and it would all be so much simpler. But as with so many dreams, I failed, and nothing was how I wanted it.
He drew his mount round and stared back at that now distant shape on the ground.
Fallen one, I understand now. You maimed me outside the city of Pale. You hollowed out one eye, made a cave in my skull. Spirits wandered in for shelter time and again. They made use of that cave. They made use of me. But now they are gone, and only you remain, whispering promises in the hollow of my wound. But can't you see the truth of this? He muttered. I hold on, but I feel my grip slipping. It's slipping, fallen one.
Still, he would cling to this last promise for as long as he could. He would make use of this one remaining eye to see this through,
if I can.
He kicked his horse into motion, swinging inland, into the wake of the guardians of the gate. The hamlets and villages of the headland were grey, abandoned, every surface coated in the ash from the spire. Furrowed fields made ripples of dull white, as if buried in snow. Here and there, the jutting cage of ribs and hip bones made broken humps. He rode past them all, through the hanging dust cloud left behind by the bridge burners, and in the distance ahead, rising above banks of fog, the spire.
Huddled close in this cave, it's almost time.
Once, long ago, the treeless plains of this land had been crowded with vast herds of furred beasts, moving in mass migrations to the siren call of the seasons. Brother Diligence was reminded of those huge creatures as he watched the bulky provision wagons wheel upslope on the raised tracks, away from the trenches and redoubts. Feeding almost 50,000 soldiers had begun to strain the logistics of supply. Another week of this waiting would empty the granaries of the city. But there would be no need for another week. The enemy was even now marshalling to the south, with outriders riding along the far ridge on the other side of the valley's broad, gentle saddle. The dawn air was brittle with surging energies. Akrast Corvalane swirled so thick it was almost visible to his eyes. Yet he sensed deep agitation, alien currents gnawing at the edges of the Elder Warren's manifestation, and this troubled him. He stood on a slightly raised, elongated platform overlooking the defences, and as the day's light lifted, he scanned yet again the complicated investment of embankments, slit trenches, machicolations, fortlets and redoubts spread out below him. In his mind, he envisioned the enemy advance, watched as the subtle adjustments he'd had made to the approaches funneled and crowded the attackers, punishing them at the forefront by onager defilade, and then taking them on the flanks by enfilading arrow fire from the mounded redoubts. He saw the swarming waves of enemy soldiers thrust and driven this way and that, chewing fiercely at the strong points only to reel back bloodied. His eyes tracked down to the centre high-backed earthworks where he had positioned the Perish Greyhelms, They were locked in place, thrust down onto the flatland, with few avenues for retreat. Too eager to kneel, that shield anvil. And the young girl, there had been a feral look in her eyes diligence did not trust. But they would fight and die in one place, and he was confident that they would hold the center for as long as needed. By all estimations, his defenders outnumbered the attackers, making the enemy's chances for success virtually non-existent. This invasion had already failed. The planks underfoot creaked and bowed slightly, and Brother Diligence turned to see that Shield Anvil Tanakalian had arrived on the platform. The man was pale, his face glistening with sweat. He approached the Forkerel Asael as if struggling to stay upright, and Diligence smiled upon imagining the man flinging himself prostrate at his feet.
"Shield Anvil, how fare your brothers and sisters?"
Tanakalian wiped sweat from his upper lip. "The Balkando forces possess a mailed fist in the Evertine Legion, Brother Diligence, commanded by Queen Abrastil herself. And then there are the Gilk Bargast."
"Bargast? This is your first mention of them," Diligence sighed. "So they have at last come to the home of their ancient kin, have they? How fitting."
"They see themselves as shock troops, sir. You will know them by their white-painted faces." Diligence started.
"White-painted faces?"
Tanakalian's eyes narrowed. "They call themselves the White Face Bargast, yes."
"Long ago," Diligence said, half in wonder, "we created a Bargast army to serve us. They sought to emulate the Forkerel Asael in appearance, electing to bleach the skin of their faces."
Frowning, the Shield Anvil shook his head. "There was, I believe, some kind of prophecy guiding them across the seas to land north of Lether. A holy war to be fought, or some such thing. We believe that only the Gilk clan remains."
"They betrayed us," Diligence said, studying Tanakalian. "Many Pures died at their hand. Tell me, these Gilk, are they in the habit of wearing armor?"
"Turtle shell, yes. Most strange."
"Gilankai! Their hands are drenched in the blood of Pures!"
Tanakalian backed a step in the face of this sudden fury. Seeing this, Diligence narrowed his gaze on the Shield Anvil.
"How many warriors among these Gilk?"
3,000, perhaps? 4? Snarling, Diligence turned to face the valley again.
"The weapons of the Forkerel Asael are our hands and feet. The Gilankai devised an armor to blunt our blows. Shield Anvil, when they come, concentrate against these Bargast. Break them."
"Sir, I cannot command the presentation of enemy forces. I came here to tell you it is my suspicion that the Evertine Legion will engage the Grey Helms, a clash of heavy infantry. We shall lock jaws with them, and we shall prevail. As such, sir, we leave the Gilk, the Safi, and other assorted auxiliaries to your Colansi. In addition to the Lethary, of course."
"Any other threats you've yet to mention, brother?"
"Sir, you vastly outnumber the attackers. I expect we shall make short work of them."
"And does this disappoint you, Shield Anvil?"
Tanakalian wiped again at the sweat beading his upper lip. "Provided you do not seek to use your voice, sir, to demand surrender, we shall welcome all the blood spilled on this day."
"Of course. It is the slaughter you so desire. Perhaps I shall indulge you in this. Perhaps not."
The Shield Anvil's eyes flicked away momentarily, and then he bowed. "As you will, sir."
"Best return to your soldiers," Diligence said, "and keep a watchful eye on that Destriant. She is not what she would like us to believe she is."
Tanakalian stiffened and then bowed again. Diligence watched the fool hurry away. Watered Hestand thumped up onto the platform and saluted.
"Blessed Pure, our scouts report the advance of the enemy.
They will soon crest the ridge and come into view.
Very well.
Sir, there are not enough of them.
Indeed.
As Hestand hesitated, Diligence turned to eye the officer.
Your thoughts?
Sir, surely their own scouts have assessed our numbers and the completeness of our defenses. Unless they hold some hidden knife or weapon, they cannot hope to best us. Sir.
Go on.
The high-watered among us have sensed the sudden absence of Brother Serenity far to the northwest. Clearly, the forces that emerged from the keep are now advancing, and somehow they are proving their worth against even the most powerful Pures.
Hestand.
Sir?
This is not the day to fret over distant events, no matter how disquieting they may be.
Sir, it is my thought. Perhaps the enemy now arraying before us possess similar efficacy when it comes to the Fokrul Asael.
After a long moment, Diligence nodded.
Well said. I appreciate your persistence on this matter. By your courage, you chastise me. Hestand, you are wise to awaken caution. As you have observed, the enemy before us cannot hope to prevail. Nor can they be so blind that they cannot see the hard truth awaiting them. Raising the question, what secret do they possess?
Sir, what can we do?
Only wait and see, Hestand.
Diligence turned back to the valley, tracked with his eyes down the paths leading to the center redoubt and the wolf standards of the parish.
Perhaps I should compel the shield anvil. He is holding something back. I see that now. What I took for nerves before battle, I may have misread him.
Shall I retrieve the parish commander, sir? Or perhaps send a squad down to arrest him?
Diligence shook his head.
And invite a mutiny among the troops holding our center? No. I believe I must undertake this task in person.
Sir, is there time?
And Hestand now pointed to the south ridge. The enemy were presenting in a solid line along the crest. Diligence studied the distant scene for a moment, and then he nodded.
There is time. Await me here, Hestand. I shall not be gone long.
She had ascended the spire and now stood, her back to the altar and the heart it held, facing out onto the bay. The fleet of anchored parish ships rocked like wood chips in a cauldron of boiling water, and as she watched, she saw a trio of masts snap in a writhing fury of shredded stays. The white spume of the waves sprayed high into the air. Sister Reverence found that she was trembling.
There is something down there, in the depth of the bay, something building to rage. Strangers have come among us.
Spinning, she faced inland, eyes darting as she studied the vast array of defences crowding the approach to the narrow isthmus. 20,000 elite Colansi heavy infantry, their pikes forming thick bands of forest in solid ribbons all down the tiered descent. 1,500 onagers, clustered in raised fortlets interspersed among the trench lines, each one capable of releasing 12 heavy quarrels in a single salvo, with reloading time less than 40 heartbeats. The defilade down the choke point ensured devastation should any attacker strive to close on the lowest fortifications. There was a taste of bitter metal in her mouth. Her bones ached despite the gusts of hot, rancid air belching out from fissures in the stone on all sides.
I am afraid. Should I reach out to Brother Diligence? Should I avail myself of all these unknown terrors? But what enemy can I show him? An unruly bay? That vague bank of fog or dust to the south? These things are nothing. He prepares for a battle. He has his mind on real matters, not an old woman's gibbering imagination.
She should never have sent Brother Serenity away. And now he was dead. She had shared his last visions,
raging fire, the flames blackening his once white skin, scouring the flesh of his face, boiling the water of his eyes until the balls burst.
And his cries, abyss below, his cries, the fire filling his mouth, the flames sweeping in, sucked past charred lips, igniting his lungs. Such a terrible death.
These humans were an abomination. Their brutal ways shook her to the core. There was no end to their capacity for cruel destruction, no end to their will to deliver horror and death. The world would find a clean breath once they were all gone, finally a clean and blessedly innocent breath.
Akrast Corvalain, attend me. This is the day we are challenged. We must prevail.
Reverence walked to stand before the altar. She glared down at the knotted object set in the surface of the stone. Awakening her sorcerous vision, she studied the now visible chains binding the heart down. All her ancestors, their bones given new shapes, but their strength had not changed. There was no weakness in what she saw. The sight relieved her.
No one shall take this from us. If I must, I will destroy it by my own hand.
The warrens surrounding the heart had kept it hidden for all this time. What had changed? How had it been found?
Not even the gods could sense it, not hidden here at the heart of our warren. And yet we are about to be attacked. We are about to be besieged. I feel the truth of this. Who could have found it?
A sudden thought struck her, clenching like a fist in the center of her chest.
The fallen one! But no, he is too weak, bound by his own chains. What gambit is he playing? To think that he could challenge us? No, this is madness.
But then, was the crippled god not mad? Tortured in agony, broken, ripped apart, fragments of him scattered across half the world.
But I am the one holding his heart. I have stolen it. Ha! And see how deep and how vast, my love. Watch as I squeeze it dry of all life. A marriage of justice with pain. Is this not the torture of the world, of all worlds? No, she whispered. I will never relinquish my love. Never! This is the only worship worthy of the name. I hold in my hand a god's heart, and together we sing a thousand songs of suffering.
Distant eruptions drew her round. The perished ships, torn from their anchors, the huge vessels now lifting wild on the heaving swells, white foam spouting skyward, splinters as ships collided broke apart, the wolf heads drowning on all sides. She saw the Colansi ships in the harbour directly below, moored to the moles and the inside of the breakwater, all stirring like beasts milling in blind confusion. Waves hammered the stone breakwater, lifting enormous sheets into the air. And yet...
There is no wind. There is no wind!
Grubb was almost lost in the moulded scale saddle behind the shoulders of the Vigath. And yet, as the beast loped forward, he was not tossed about as he would have been if on a horse. The scales were still changing, growing to shield his legs, including his thighs, as if the saddle sought to become armour as well. He was amazed at seeing such a thing. Flanged scales now rose to encircle his hips. He had a moment of fear. Would this armour, extruded out from the beast he was riding, eventually encase him in entirety? Would it ever release him? He turned his head to the rider travelling beside him, to see if the Vigath's thick hide was growing up in the same way, but no, there it remained, an ornate saddle, that and nothing more, and mortal sword Krughava rode it with all the ease and familiarity of a veteran. He envied such people, for whom everything came so easily.
My father was not like that. He was never a natural fighter. He had nothing of the talent of, say, Kalam Mekar, or Stormy or Gessler. He was just an average man, forced to be more than he was. I am glad I did not see him die. I am glad my memories see him as only alive, forever alive. I think I can live with that. I have no choice.
They had left the Kachin Chimal army halfway through last night, and now they were swiftly closing on the Letharian Balkando armies. If he stretched up, as far as the sheathing armor round his thighs would permit, he could see directly ahead the dark, seething stain of the troops ascending to the ridge. Grubb glanced again across at Krughava. She was wearing her helm, the visor dropped down and the hinges locked. The wolfskin cape was too heavy to skirl out behind her, despite the swift pace the Vigath were setting, but still it flowed down with impressive grace along the horizontal back of the Kachin Chimal, sweeping down to cover its hips and the projecting mass of its upper leg muscles, so that the fur rippled and glistened as the muscles bunched and stretched. She would have made a frightening mother, he decided, this Krughava. Frightening, and yet, if she gave a child her love, he suspected it would be unassailable.
Fierce as a she-wolf, yes. But I have no mother. Maybe I never had one. I don't remember. Not a single face swimming blurry in my dreams. Nothing. And now I have no father. I have no one, and when I look ahead into my future, I see myself riding forever alone.
The notion, which he trucked out again and again, as if to taste it on his tongue, stirred nothing in him. He wondered if there was something wrong with him. He wondered if, years from now, on that long journey, he might find it, that wrongness, like a corpse lying on the ground on the path ahead. He wondered what he would feel then. Thinking back on their parting from the Kachin army, Grubb tried to recall the reasons behind his decision to leave Sin's side. Something had pulled him to Bryce Bedict and all the Letharian Balkando, a vague belief that he would be more useful there, though he had no idea what he might do or if he had anything to give. It was easier thinking of this like that, instead of the suspicion that he was fleeing Sin, fleeing what she might do.
"No one can stop me, Grubb, no one but you."
So she'd told him more than once, but not in a reassuring way, not in a way that told him that he mattered to her. No, it was more like a challenge, as if to ask, "What have you got hidden inside you, Grubb? Let's see, shall we?" But he didn't want to know what he had inside him. That day they'd come to do battle with the moons, that day when there had been fire and stone and earth and something cold at the center of it all, he had felt himself falling away. And the boy who had walked at Sin's side was somebody else, wearing his skin, wearing his face. It had been terrifying.
All that power, how it poured through us. I didn't like it. I don't like it. I'm not running away. Sin can do what she likes. I can't really stop her, and I don't want her to prove it, despite her own words. I don't want to hear her laughing. I don't want to look into her eyes and see the fires of Telas.
They had been seen, and now the warrior beasts under them were shifting their approach, angling towards a small party that had ridden out to one side. Prince Bedict, Aranict, Queen Abrastel and Spax, and three people he'd not seen before, two women and a tall, ungainly-looking man with a long face. Just behind this group, standing alone and impossibly tall, was a woman shrouded in a cloak of rabbit skins, down to her ankles, her hair a wild, tangled mane of brown, her face looking like it had been carved from sandstone. The thumping gait of the Vigath fell off as they drew nearer. Glancing down, Grubb saw that the armor formed a high collar up past his hips, flaring out just beneath his ribs. And behind his back, an upthrust of overlapping scales formed a kind of backrest, protecting his spine. The Kachin Chimal halted, and Grubb saw Bryce Bedict studying Krughava.
"You are a most welcome sight, mortal sword."
"Where are my parish positioned?"
Krughava demanded in a voice like grating gravel. Queen Abrastel replied,
"Center, nearest line of defenses and a little way past that. Mortal sword, their position is untenable. They are provided no avenues of retreat. With a little pushing, we can attack them on three sides."
Krughava grunted.
"We are meant to maul ourselves on this studded fist, sirs. And should they all die, my parish,
It is of little interest to the Fokra Lasail.
We more or less worked that one out,
Spax said. The Gilk war chief was in full turtle shell armor, his face painted white, the eyes rimmed in deep red ochre. The mortal sword was momentarily silent, her gaze moving from one figure to the next, then slipping past to narrow on the huge woman standing 15 paces back.
You have found new allies, Prince. Toblakai?
Bryce glanced back, made a face.
Gods below, I've never known a woman as shy as her. She is Teblor, and she commands 300 of her kind. She is named Gilimada.
Where will you place them?
Krughava's tone was, if anything, yet harsher than it had been a moment earlier. Grubb saw them all hesitating, and this confused him.
What is wrong?
Aranikt lit a new stick from her old one and flung the latter away, speaking all the while.
Mortal sword, there are over 40,000 Kalansi on the other side of the valley.
40,000?
We are faced with a challenge, Bryce Bedict said. We must endeavor to engage the entirety of this force for as long as possible.
Queen Abrastol spoke.
Once the Pure commanding here learns of the real assault, the one upon the spire, he will seek to withdraw as many of his troops as he can safely manage. We judge 3 bells to fast march to the isthmus. In other words, they can reach that battle in time, mortal sword, and strike at Gessler's flank. As yet, we can determine no way in which to prevent this happening.
I will turn the parish, pronounced Krughava. I will pull them from their position and wheel them round, placing them to block the way east. We need only slow the enemy, sirs, not stop them.
If you so succeed in regaining your command of the Grey Helms, said Bryce, will you welcome the company of the Teblor?
Krughava's thinned eyes switched to the Teblor commander.
Sirs, she said, loud enough for all to hear, to fight alongside the Teblor would be an honor unsurpassed on this day.
Grubb sought to see the effect of these words, but from Gilimada there was no reaction at all.
Mortal sword, said Queen Abrastol. Are you confident that you can resume command of the Grey Helms? And before you answer, this is not the time for unrealistic bravado.
Krughava stiffened at that.
Do you imagine that I do not understand the severity of this moment, Highness? I will speak plainly. I do not know if I will succeed, but I will give my life in the effort. Would you ask more of me?
Abrastol shook her head.
We must, however, said Bryce, present ourselves to the enemy in such a manner as to deal with either eventuality.
A loud voice suddenly boomed.
They talk bad!
Gilimada was suddenly among them, her eyes level with the mounted men and women.
Excuse me?
She fixed the prince with her gaze, her brow fiercely knotted.
The fish faces! They use words that hurt! If this fight goes bad, the fish face will speak and make us kneel. Make us kill our own anger. You must be stubborn. You must say no and shake your heads no. You must see the fish face in your head, and then you must push him or her to the ground. And then you must squat, and then you must shit on that fish face. I have spoken.
A short time of awkward silence, and then Grubb saw that Aranikt was staring straight at him. He felt a strange shiver track up his spine.
I don't know,
he said in a small voice. All eyes fixed on him, and he felt himself shrinking inside his peculiar half-armor. Aranikt spoke.
Grubb, we have heard what you achieved when you joined the battle between the Kachin factions. The Teblor commander speaks of the power of Akrast Korvalain, this sorcery of the voice, and we are uncertain if we will face that power today, nor do we know how to oppose it if it should come.
Shit! Bellowed Gilimada. I have spoken!
Grubb shook his head.
At the Battle of the Moons, that was sin. Most of it. She just used me, as if I was a knife in her left hand. I don't know what I can do.
We shall deal with that threat when it comes, announced Bryce Bedict.
For now, I would welcome suggestions on the engagement. Queen Abrastel, what are your thoughts?
The Balkando woman scowled. She unstrapped and drew off her helm, revealing a shaved head.
I think we should ignore the perish. Long may they sit in their holes, or,
and she shot a glance at Krughava,
spin their standards round, should the mortal sword reassert her authority. Either way, we leave the center alone.
Bryce was nodding.
I was thinking much the same. I have no taste for spilling perish blood, and in truth the Asael commander has done us a favor by so isolating them. This said, we must wait our right flank. The moment we see the enemy splitting to form up and fast march towards the spire, we need to contest that move with as much ferocity as we can manage. Accordingly, I would the Teblor form the center of that intercept.
The rest will need only a handful to hold us off the trenches,
Spax muttered.
So we engage with but a handful, Bryce retorted, and peel off rank on rank as fast as we are able to.
That will have to do, said Abrastel. No offence, Prince, but I will place the Evertine Legion on the right of centre.
None taken, Highness. You are correct in assessing your legion as our elites. Once we start that wheeling of reserves, the enemy might well advance pressure on your side to break through and cut off our motion eastward.
I would do the same, Abrastel replied. We shall be ready for that.
Very well. Bryce looked round. That's it, then? So be it. All of you, in the tasks awaiting you, farewell.
Krughava said,
Prince, I will ride with you to the ridge.
Bryce nodded. As the group dispersed, Grab allowed his vergath to fall in behind Krughava's. He looked up at the sky. The jade strangers blazed directly overhead, the point of each talon as bright as the sun itself. The sky was too crowded, and in a flash, he suddenly knew that it would get much more crowded before this day was done.
What the fuck is this?
Careful, muttered Stormy. Your language is offending our destriant.
Growling under his breath, Gessler pulled his feet from the scale stirrups and clambered to stand balanced on the Vigath's back.
A hood damned army, all right, but I see no camp, and they're looking rough.
Gods below, Guess. Sit back down before you fall and break your scrawny neck.
Stormy turned to Callis.
Halt 'em all, lass, except for Sag Churok. We'll take the Kell Hunter with us and check this out.
The woman nodded. As the vast Kachain Chimal army ceased its advance, Gessler gestured and led Stormy and Sag Churok forward at what passed for a canter. The mysterious army stood motionless on a treed hill at the edge of an abandoned village. Squinting, Gessler looked for the usual flash of armor and weapons, but there was none of that.
Maybe not an army at all,
he muttered as Stormy rode up alongside him.
Maybe refugees.
Your eyes are getting bad, Guess.
What do you mean?
Old man, you've gone blind as Hood's own arsehole. Those are Tlani Mas.
Oh, shit. Who invited those hoary bastards?
He shot Stormy a glare.
Was it you, O carrier of flint fucking swords?
I know nothing about 'em, Gessler, I swear it.
Right, playing friendly on ships, and now look, you never could just stay out of other people's business, Stormy. A soul stuck in the sky. Oh, let me fix that.
This ain't them, Gessler. Can't be. Besides, that debt was paid up back in Malaz City. You was there. I gave that sword back.
Off to one side, Sag Churok suddenly clashed his massive swords and both men looked over. Gessler snorted.
Think he just told us to shut up, Stormy.
They were fast closing on the hill with its grey, silent mass of undead warriors.
That hill, that's a cemetery. Well, where else would they be?
Gessler saw one warrior setting off down the lumpy hillside, dragging its stone sword as a child would an oversized branch.
That one, he said, wants to talk to us.
Better than rising up under our feet and cutting us to pieces.
Aye, much better. What do you think, Stormy? We got ourselves unexpected allies?
Pity the Asael if we have.
Gessler spat.
This ain't the day for pity. Sag Churok, don't do anything stupid like attacking it, all right?
They slowed to a walk 30 paces from the lone Tlani Mas. At 15, the Kel hunter halted and planted the tips of his swords in the ground. Gessler and Stormy continued on, halting 5 paces from the undead warrior. Gessler called out,
"What clan?"
For a moment, it seemed the Tlani Mas would ignore the question, but then, in a heavy, rasping voice, the warrior said,
"Logros Malazan. I am Onos Tulan."
"Onos,"
Gessler began, then snapped his mouth shut. Stormy muttered a curse.
"Can't be. The first sword? How many cronies of that long-dead rat-faced emperor are involved in this?"
More Tlani Mas were coming down from the hill, ragged and slow, like the grinding of stones, and Gessler sensed something wretched in this scene, something appalling.
"What are they doing here?"
Onos Tulan spoke.
"Logros's banishment of me was without meaning, Malazan. I knelt before a mortal human on the throne of bones, and there is none other whom I shall serve. This is what Olar Ithil did not comprehend. Bound once more to the ritual of Telan, I am returned to the shadow of the Emperor."
Gessler felt sick inside. He knew he was getting only a taste of what all this meant, but it was already breaking his heart.
"He sent you, first sword?"
"I am invited to my own death, Malazan. The manner of it remains to be decided. If the one upon the throne could see into my soul, he would know that I am broken."
"Broken, you say?" Stormy interrupted. "Now that's an interesting fact, Onos Tulan."
The ancient warrior tilted his head.
"I do not understand your meaning."
Stormy pointed north.
"See that spar of rock, first sword? Right up top of that, there's something else. Something just as broken as you are. The Fulcral Asael are guarding it, but we mean to take it from them. You say Kellenved ordered you here, so we got to know, first sword. Are you here to fight? And if you are, will it be against us or at our side?"
"You are Malazans."
"The army behind us ain't."
Onos Tulan was silent for a time, and then he said,
"The Kachain Chamal hunted Imas from time to time.
Just like you hunted Bedarin or elk or whatever. What of it?"
"When we were mortal, we had cause to fear them.
And elk will run when it sees you. But then you're not mortal anymore, are you?"
"I am here, Malazans, seeking a war. And yet only now do I realize that I have walked in shadow all this time since I first rose from the dust outside the city of Pale. I thought I was abandoned, and each time I sought a new path, that shadow followed me. That shadow found me, as it must. I am the first sword of the Tlani Mas, and from this there is no escape."
Gessler cleared his throat, blinked to work the water from his eyes.
"First sword, am I understanding you? Are you placing yourselves under our command, just because we happen to have come from the Malazan Empire? Before you answer, you've got to understand, Kellenved is long dead, and that empire has since outlawed us. We're not here because of any damned throne, and we're not at the beckoning of anyone who's sitting in it either."
"Tell me then, human, why are you here?"
Gessler looked up, studied the hundreds of Tlani Mas crowding the hillside, spilling out into the streets and avenues of the village. Lifeless faces were turned to him, and their regard was a crushing weight.
"Gods below. It sounds stupid, you know,"
he said, now eyeing Stormy,
"when you just out and say it."
"Go on,"
growled Stormy, his face reddening as emotions rose within the huge man. Gessler could see it, and he was experiencing the same thing. The air itself seemed to swirl with feelings of appalling force.
"Go on, Gessler,
and if it makes us fools, well, we can live with that, can't we?
Sighing, he faced Onos Tulan.
Why are we here? The truth is, we're not even sure. But we think we're here to right an old wrong, because it's the thing to do, that's all.
Silence, stretching. Gessler turned back to Stormy.
I knew it'd sound stupid.
Onos Tulan spoke.
What do you seek on that spire, Gessler of the Malazans?
The heart of the crippled god.
Why?
Because, Stormy replied, we want to free him.
He is chained.
We know.
Onos Tulan said nothing for a moment, and then...
You would defy the will of the gods?
Fast as spit, Stormy said.
Why do you wish to free the fallen one?
When Stormy hesitated, Gessler shifted in the scaled saddle and said,
Good, take us. We want to send him home.
Home.
The word very nearly drove Onos Tulan to his knees. Something was roaring in his skull. He had believed it to be the sound of his own rage, but now he could sense a multitude of voices in that cacophony. More than the unfettered thoughts of the Talani Mas following him. More than the still distant conflagration that was the Otataral dragon and the Elaint. No, what deafened him here was the unceasing echoes of terrible pain. This land, all the life that had once thrived here, only to falter and suffer and finally vanish. And there, upon that tower of rock, that cracked spire that was the core of a restless volcano, where the earth's blood coursed so close to the surface in serpentine tracks round its fissured, hollowed base, another broken piece of a broken, shattered god, a being that had been writhing in torment for thousands of years.
No different from the Talani Mas, no different from us. The shadow of a throne, is that not a cold, frightening place? And yet, Kellanved, do you truly offer succor? Dare you cast a shadow to shield us, to protect us, to humble us in the name of humanity? I once called you our children, our inheritors. Forgive my irony, for all the venal among your kind. I had thought... No matter.
In his mind, he reached among his followers, found the one he sought. She was close, almost behind him.
Bonecaster Bitterspring of the second ritual, do you hear me?
I do, First Sword.
You are named a seer. Can you see what awaits us?
I have no true gift of prophecy, First Sword. My talent was in reading people. That and nothing more. I have been an impostor for so long, I know no other way of being.
Bitter Spring, we are all impostors. What awaits us?
What has always awaited us,
she replied.
Blood and tears.
In truth, he'd had no reason to expect anything else. Onos Tulan drew his flint sword round, dragging a jagged furrow through dirt and stones. He lifted his gaze to the Malazans.
Even the power of Telan cannot penetrate the wards raised by the Forkral Asael. We cannot therefore rise in the midst of the enemy in their trenches. This will have to be a direct assault.
We know that,
the one named Gessler said.
We shall fight for you,
Onos Tulan said, and then he was silent, confused at seeing the effect of his words on these two men.
Have I distressed you?
Gessler shook his head.
No, you greatly relieve us, First Sword. It is not that, it's just...
And he shook his head.
Now it's my turn to ask, why?
If by our sacrifice, yours and mine, said Onos Tulan, the pain of one life can be ended, if by our deaths this one can be guided home, we will judge this a worthy cause.
This crippled god,
He is a stranger to us all. It is enough that in the place he calls home, he is no stranger. Why should these words force tears from these two hardened soldiers? I do not understand.
Onos Tulan opened his mind to his followers.
You have heard. You have shared. This is the path your first sword chooses. But I will not compel you, and so I ask, will you fight at my side this day?
Bitter Spring replied, First sword, I am chosen to speak for all. We have seen the sun rise. It may be that we shall not see it set. Thus, we have us this one day to find the measure of our worth. It is, perhaps, less time than many might possess, but so too is it more than many others are privileged to know. One day to see who and what we are. One day to find meaning in our existence. First sword, we welcome the opportunity you have given us. Today we shall be your kin. Today we shall be your sisters and brothers.
To this Onos Tulan could find no words. He floundered for what seemed a long, long time. And then from the depths of his being there arose a strange feeling, a sense of recognition.
Then you shall be my kin on this day, and among my kin am I not at last home?
He had spoken these words out loud, and turning he saw surprise on the faces of the two Malazans. Onos Tulan stepped forward.
Malazans, make it known to your Kachain Chemal. Each in our time we two peoples have warred against the Fokral Asel. On this day, for the very first time, we shall do so as allies.
15 paces back, the Kel hunter straightened then, and lifted high both swords, and Onos Tulan felt its reptilian eyes fixed solely upon him, and he raised his own weapon.
One more gift, then, on this final day. I see you, Kachain Chemal. And I call you brother.
Gessler wiped at his eyes. He could not fathom the rawness of his emotions.
First sword, he called out in a roughened voice. How many of your warriors are here?
Onos Tulan hesitated and then said,
I do not know.
Another Tlanimas, who had been standing behind Onos Tulan, then spoke.
Mortals, we are 8,684.
Hoot's black breath, Stormy swore. Gessler, Tlani Mas in the center, with Vigas to either side and Kel screening our flanks?
Aye, Gessler nodded.
First sword, do you know the jagged teeth?
Gessler,
Onos Tulan cut in,
like you, I am a veteran of the Seven Cities campaigns. Guess you are, aren't you?
Gessler grinned.
Stormy, suck some oil and get our lizards back up and moving. I don't see any point in wasting any time on this.
Fine, but what about you?
Me and Sag Churok, we're riding ahead. I want to see the lay of the land, especially at the base of the spire. You catch us up, right?
Stormy nodded.
Good enough. How come that winged snake's not around again?
How should I know? Get going. I'll see you on whatever high ground I find. Make sure we draw up in formation. I don't plan on posing for the bastards.
Kalith stood close to Matron Gunth Mac. The Destriant had crossed her arms and knew the gesture to be protective, though it did little good, not in the face of what was coming. Wars were not part of the Elan heritage. Skirmishes, yes, and feuds and raids, but not wars. But already she had been in the midst of one, and now here she was, about to join another. The frail woman stumbling from the camp so long ago now would have quailed at the thought, would have wept, helpless with fear.
It was the flavors of the Kachane Chamal that now made her resilient, resolute.
You are wrong in that, Destriant.
She turned in surprise, studied the huge reptilian head hovering at her side, close enough to caress.
It is your courage, Kalith insisted. It has to be. I have none of my own. You are mistaken. It is your courage that gives us strength, Destriant. It is your humanness that guides us into the waiting darkness of battle.
Kalith shook her head.
But I don't know why we're here. I don't know why we're going to fight this battle. We should have led you away, somewhere far from everyone else. Somewhere you don't have to fight and die, a place to live in peace. There is no such place, Destriant. Even in isolation we were assailed, by our own doubts, by all the flavors of grief and despair. You and the mortal sword and the shield anvil, you have led us back into the living world. We have come from a place of death, but now we shall take our place among the peoples of this world. It is right that we do so. But so many of you will die today. We must fight to earn our right to all we would claim for ourselves. This is the struggle of all life. There are those who would deny us this right. They feel it belongs to them alone. Today, we shall assert otherwise. Be free this day, Destriant. You have done what was needed. You have guided us here. The mortal sword and the shield anvil shall lead us into battle, and by the wind's scent, we shall be joined by T'lani Mas, in whom the hope for redemption is no stranger.
Thinking about Stormy and Gessler, Kalith shivered.
Protect them, I beg you. They shall lead. It is their purpose. This too is freedom.
Motion in the corner of her eye drew Kalith's attention. Sin, slipping down from the back of her vigath, racing forward a few steps in the manner of any carefree child, and then she whirled like a dancer and faced Kalith.
The worm is burning. Can't you taste it? Burning!
Kalith shook her head.
I don't know what you mean, Sin.
But the girl was smiling.
You can't leave fire behind. Once you've found it, you carry it with you. It's in the swords in your hands. It's in the armor you wear, and the food you eat, and the warmth of the night, and the way to see through the dark. And it never sits still. It's always moving. It moved away from the Imas when they turned from it. But now they'll see that the fire they once knew didn't leave them. It just spread out. But maybe they won't understand anyway. They're not even alive after all. You forget so much when you stop living.
She waved her arms in her excitement.
That's what was wrong with the lizard camps. No fires.
She jabbed a finger at the matron, hissed.
You need reminding about fire.
The words were bitter as ice, and Kalith found her arms wrapping yet tighter about her chest. And from beside her, the flavor of Gunth Mac's oil suddenly soured, and the Destriant knew it for what it was.
She is afraid. The matron is afraid.
Sister Reverence stared to the south.
At last, the enemy shows its face.
Still too far to make out anything more than the solid, dark mass of advancing legions.
Those numbers are paltry. They need 50,000 or 60,000 to even hope to break the defences. And from the looks of it, these are cavalry. Imagine the forage they must have carried with them.
She glanced to the left, but the storm in the bay was unchanged, the cauldron ferocious, yet striking her as strangely impotent.
The one hiding there can come no closer. Accursed Corvalane is too powerful, drinking deep of the fallen one's heart. It is too late for all of them. We have grown too strong. We have achieved what we sought.
A Wartard was on the stairs below, using both feet and hands to make his way up, his gasp sounding torn and raw. Sister Reverence awaited him with impatience.
Even with our blessed blood, their humanness makes them so weak. Beloved sister, I am here, she replied. Our scouts have returned, the army to the south. I see it, yes. They are giant lizards, thousands of giant lizards.
Sister Reverence staggered back a step. Then, in a surge of suddenly febrile power, she quested out towards that army, her mind reaching,